shortly before I left Thailand to come back to live in the States, I participated in a commemoration of Ajahn Lee's passing away. And every year when they would do that, they would invite a senior monk, either a senior monk from Bangkok or a senior monk from the forest tradition, to give the final Dharma talk, to close the ceremonies. And that year was going to be a senior monk from Bangkok. And the time came for the talk, and he wasn't there. A phone call came saying that he was stuck in traffic. And he said, go ahead and have someone else give the talk. So they got one of the forest Ajahns, who got up and gave a talk on suffering, saying that this is what the Buddhist teachings were all about, suffering. Then when he finished the talk, shortly after he finished, the monk from Bangkok arrived. So they asked him to get up and give another talk. And the theme of his talk was the Buddhist teachings are all about happiness. And they were both right. The purpose of the Buddhist teachings is happiness. A happiness that's true, a happiness that's blameless. The happiness itself doesn't harm you, and the things you do don't harm you, and they don't harm anybody else. But for it to be true, you have to look squarely at suffering to see what the mind is doing, because both happiness and suffering in the Buddha's analysis are things that you do. Now, when we're suffering, we usually think that we're on the receiving end of something bad. That may be the case. There's a lot of bad things out there in the world that we receive. But in the Buddha's analysis, those aren't the things that make us suffer. We suffer from our own lack of skill in how we relate to the good and bad things of the world. And so it's in the same way, if you want to be happy, you have to bring some skill to how you relate to the things in the world. And the good message of the Buddha's teachings is that true happiness is possible, something you can do. You can develop the skills. I was reading a while back an analysis, someone saying that the Buddhist analysis of happiness and suffering is that we're on the edge of a beach, and waves are coming in. We simply have to accept the fact that good waves come and bad waves come. And if you can learn how to accept that fact, then you're okay. As if that's what the teachings were all about. That's only a very beginning stage, accepting the fact the world has good and bad things, but turning around, the Buddha would say, turn around, look at what you're doing with those good and bad things. It's not just a matter of accepting. Happiness is something that you actively pursue. You can see this in the Buddha's question as to what lies at the beginning of wisdom and discernment. It's the question, what when I do it will lead to long-term welfare and happiness? What's skillful? What's blameless? The wisdom there lies in seeing, one, that long-term happiness is possible, and two, that long-term is better than short-term, and three, it's going to depend on your actions. And the very beginning answer to that question, what leads to long-term wealth and happiness, are three activities that the Buddha identifies. He uses the Pali word punya, which is often translated as merit, but that has unfortunate implications or connotations in English. Sounds like brownie points, merit badges. I think a better translation would be goodness. You do goodness in the Buddha's analysis. Now, goodness is another one of those words that's not talked about much in our culture. It's a shame. A while back, I went onto Amazon and I typed goodness into the search box just to see what would come out. And it was mainly books on baked goods, pies, cakes, cookies. And that's not the kind of goodness the Buddha was talking about. He was talking about the goodness of the heart, goodness of your actions, the goodness in the way you relate to yourself and the way you relate to other people. Because the practice, even though a large part of the practice is meditation, it's not just you alone with your eyes closed. to get good results when you're sitting here with your eyes closed depends on the way you live your life. As the Buddha said, there are two other activities that lead to a happiness that doesn't harm anyone. One is generosity, and the other is virtue. Generosity, of course, means giving. And as the Buddha said, you give where you feel inspired. But if you want your giving to be skillful, you want to be careful about your motivation for giving, the actual items you give, and the people you give to. You can turn generosity into a skill. Your motivation starts with, you're going to be getting this back, and that's an okay motivation, but it's not the highest. It goes up many levels. When you feel simply that giving is good, or you feel it's not right when you have something and other people are poor and they don't have it, you have more than enough to share. You feel compelled to give. And finally gets to the level where it's just simply a natural expression of the mind. The mind doesn't grab onto things. It sees this item would be good in the hands of that person and is happy to give. In terms of the items, you want to make sure you haven't stolen anything to give and you're not harming yourself. In other words, you're not depleting yourself too much. And you want to give an item that's actually useful for the person. Right time, right place. And as for the people you choose to give to, you want to, the Buddha says, the most skillful recipients to look for are people who are free of greed, aversion, and delusion, or people who are practicing trying to get rid of greed, aversion, and delusion, because they'll probably make the best use of the gift. And as for the recipients, the Buddha said, they should do their best to look after the gift, make sure that it gets well used. Virtue, too, is a skill. You want to behave in such a way that you don't engage in killing any living beings. You don't steal. You don't have illicit sex. You don't tell lies. You don't take intoxicants. This way you avoid the harm that would come from those activities. As the Buddha said, you want to make that universal. In other words, no killing ever. No stealing ever. This means even when the situation in the society, say, gets really difficult, you maintain your honor. And that way, he says, you give universal safety to all beings. That doesn't mean, of course, that you're protecting them from other people's misbehavior, but it means that at least from your quarter, there's no danger. This, too, is a gift. As for meditation, when the Buddha is talking about punya, or goodness in a sense, he's talking primarily about the meditation of developing goodwill, goodwill for all beings. They have chants for this, but it's not so much the chant. It's the actual wish in your mind. Okay? You're looking for a happiness that's not going to harm anyone, so you have to take their happiness into consideration. May all beings be happy. May they find true happiness. When you think about the word true there, it means may everybody look for happiness inside. Because the happiness that comes from outside comes and goes. But the happiness that comes from within can be really solid. And it doesn't require taking anything away from anyone at all. So your true happiness doesn't conflict with anyone else's. So those are the three main ways of making merit, making goodness. And the Buddha says, you can dedicate it to others. There are certain levels of being that are actually feed off the goodness that has been dedicated to them. You think here in the United States, how little dedication of merit there's been. There are probably a lot of these beings hovering around. So it's good to dedicate the merit of what you've done. That increases it. convenient images of having a candle that you've got lit. You can light other people's candles. Your candle is not depleted by sharing the flame with others. And everybody gets brighter. However, the dedication of merit and spreading thoughts of goodwill, they're two different things. Because once you've dedicated the merit, that's the end of that particular gift of merit. In other words, you don't have to think about it beyond that. And it's good for you to think about it, to appreciate the fact that you've actually done something good. In some quarters of our society, there's an embarrassment. You don't want to think of yourself as being proud of doing something good. But that's not the Buddha's attitude. He says, when you see that you've done something well, you should take joy in that fact. And when you dedicate merit to others, you realize that you've got something good to share. And it's good to underline that, to remind yourself, this is what makes human beings human. We have the goodness of generosity, we have the goodness of virtue, the goodness of goodwill for one another. And the more we can do happiness in this way, and it's good to think of happiness as something you do, the better our lives are and the better the lives of the people around us. So when you've done something good, dedicate it to others as a way of underlying the goodness and saying, I've got something so good here, I'd like to share it. But that's the end of your responsibility. Whether they accept the dedication of merit, that's up to them. And John Fuang had a student who was able to see hungry ghosts. These are the beings that are able to feed off the merit that's dedicated to them. At first she didn't like this. She'd find them in unexpected places, under stairways, in doorways, looking pretty miserable. And she asked John Fuang, how can I turn this off? He says, look, you're in a position where you can actually help these beings. And you can learn something about karma in the meantime. When you meet them, ask them, what did you do to get reborn this way? And then dedicate the merit of your practice to them. In some cases, she said, it was as if they changed their clothes and they moved on. Others were not able to accept it yet. So she went and complained about that. He said, that's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to give. Whether they can take it or not, that's up to them. But to have that giving attitude is what you really want to focus on. So the dedication of merit, once you've done it, you're no longer responsible. You don't have to follow up. However, when you spread goodwill, you're actually taking on a responsibility. You're not just sitting here thinking nice thoughts of other beings. Once you've set that intention in mind, you want to find a happiness that doesn't harm anybody. Then you have to look at how you live. Is your way of life really in line with that? That chant we had just now. Go back and look at the first several passages. It doesn't start out immediately with just saying goodwill for everybody. It talks about how you live. Someone who takes criticism easily. Someone who's not so busy with projects that you start thinking of other people just as means to your ends. You want to live a life that's light on the world. Then you develop goodwill. And then based on the concentration that comes from goodwill, there's more work to be done inside, to turn around and look at your mind. See, especially where your mind is trapped by thoughts of sensuality. In other words, your fascination with thinking about different sensual pleasures. And realizing how much that wastes your energy. Energy that could be put to a much better purpose. And how much it keeps you tied down. So that's the basic structure of that passage. It starts out with the type of life you live, and then thoughts of goodwill, and then the further meditations based on goodwill. So there's kind of a commitment that goes with goodwill. You want this to be the attitude that you bring out of the meditation as you deal with the people immediately around you. We spread thoughts of goodwill to all beings. And the beings you don't know, those are the ones who are easy to feel goodwill for. It's the beings that are right next to you. Sometimes those are the ones that are hard. As in Thai they say, the tongue is close to the teeth, and so it gets bit often. In the same way, we get bit by the people near us, and we probably bite them, too. You can ask yourself, in what ways can I have more goodwill for the people immediately around me? What would that mean? Now, it doesn't mean you're going to go around and do everything for them. Remember one of those phrases in the goodwill passages is, may beings not despise anyone or mistreat one another. In other words, you're hoping that they will actually create the causes for happiness. Because again, remember the Buddha's analysis, your happiness is something you do, their happiness is something they do. You just want to, you don't want to get in the way of their doing true happiness. And if there's any way you can help, you're happy. Which means that goodwill is something you can wish for anybody, no matter what they've been like in the past. So if you find there are people that you actually have ill will for, or you find it difficult to think positive thoughts of goodwill, stop and remind yourself. You're actually hoping that they will understand the causes for true happiness and be willing and able to act on them. And you want to get your mind in a position where you can think that for everybody. If you harbor a few thoughts of some people, say, oh, I'd like to see them suffer first. Remind yourself that when people suffer, it's not necessarily that they will then see the error of their ways and then make themselves better. Sometimes they take the suffering off on, out on others. In fact, that all too often that's what happens. So there's nothing positive accomplished by wishing for others to suffer. What's positive is your thoughts. May they understand where they've been wrong. May they be happy to change their ways, or maybe may they desire to change their ways. And you can make that thought universal without any conflict, without any hypocrisy. And so you look at your life. To what extent can you help others in that direction? That's a positive gift to the world. And in this activity of doing happiness or making happiness, you notice how much of it comes down to giving. The realization that you actually have more than enough to share, and you're happy to give it. That relates directly to the Buddha's analysis of suffering. The suffering is clinging, holding on. So you have the option. Do you want to do suffering, or you don't want to do happiness? Because these are things that you can do, you really have the choice. If your happiness had to depend on the world being a certain way outside, or if you were suffering from the way the world would be outside, that would mean you'd have to change the world in order to be happy. But the Buddha is saying that the sources of happiness and suffering, they come from within. There are activities that you do, and you can change your activities. You have the choice. And when you make the right choice, you're not the only one who benefits. The less greed, aversion, and delusion you have in your mind, the less you inflict them on other people. The truer the happiness you find inside, the more you'll be willing to share happiness with others. If your happiness is unreliable, it's very easy to take out your sense of frustration on others. So you want to have happiness that's not going to disappoint. That's what the Buddha says you can find through your actions. with a sense that you're not the only one who's going to benefit. With this kind of happiness, the benefits spread around.